Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you all very much for being here. We appreciate it. This is a special event for us. And as a special event, I particularly want to thank those who've helped sponsor this. The Friends of the Library have helped us with the reception and the program, and we're grateful to them as always. And for a mere $35, you too can become a friend of the library. See Tom Platt, who's wandering around outside somewhere, who'd be happy to sign you up. The Kansas City Association of Black Journalists has been a supporter of this program. We are grateful to them. Lewis Duguid is here tonight. And the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority, the Beta Omega chapter, has also helped us. And as you all know, if you got a Kappa behind you, you don't need anything else. So, anyway, we're grateful. We're grateful to them. It's an honor to have Sheila Brooks here with her important book on Lucille Bluford. Ms. Bluford, to some of us who knew her as a formidable, indeed legendary figure, Sheila Brooks quotes bell hooks saying, I paraphrase a little bit here, that being a black woman is to suffer a double oppression. And then she quotes Toni Morrison saying, being a black woman is to have a double competency in handling life's problems, what Toni Morrison calls the nest and the adventure. What Sheila Brooks makes clear is that both of these doublings were true of Lucille Bluford in her lifetime. For Lucille Bluford, being a black woman was both a burden and a gift. And most Kansas Cityans, of course, know of the importance of the call to Kansas City's black community and therefore to Kansas City history and to all Kansas Cityans, and know of her long association with the call as a Cub reporter, reporter, photographer, editor, and publisher, and one should say also conscience. What they may not know is how distinguished the family was and is. The book will tell you that. And when we renovated and rededicated the Lucille Bluford branch of the Kansas City Public Library, we invited her nephew, Guyon Bluford, the first African-American astronaut. Think about that for a second. And John Bluford, himself a legendary figure in healthcare, both here and nationally, who the legend himself is here with us tonight. Over there. To help us celebrate Lucille Bluford's legacy. You may not know that during the Chester Franklin, and Bluford eras of the Call, it was one of three black newspapers to have a national following, the other two being the Chicago Defender and the Pittsburgh Courier. If you were reading a black newspaper in Dallas or Tulsa or Denver, you were likely to be reading the Kansas City Call. Ms. Bluford's protege and successor, Donna Stewart, maintains the same standards of independence and excellence to this day. We celebrated her legacy by creating an important exhibit of her life and the call at the Bluford Library and by hosting exhibits and programs like this one over the years about the legal, educational, journalistic, and civil rights legacy of her life. One last thing that you might not know, you almost certainly don't know, is that Lucille Bluford was named Kansas Cityan of the Year, that part you might know, by a major Kansas City Chamber of Commerce honor in 2002. What you wouldn't know is that the chair of the nominating committee that nominated her for that award was my father. It is my honor to introduce the introducer, Olivia Dorsey.
Well, I want to thank you, Crosby, for the introduction and part of Sheila's presentation, but that's okay. I'm going to, first of all, it is truly my honor to introduce your speaker this evening because she has been a long, long, long time personal friend of mine, and I'm just so delighted and honored and privileged to be along the journey of the successes that she's had over the years. Dr. Brooks is an Emmy Award-winning journalist, entrepreneur, dedicated advocate for minority and women's issues, small businesses, and an expert in multicultural marketing and entrepreneurial education. Dr. Brooks is founder, president, and CEO of SRB Communications, a full-service 28-year-old advertising and marketing agency in Washington, D.C., with satellite offices in Baltimore and Manhattan. The boutique agency specializes in multicultural markets, public relations, media relations, community outreach, and broadcast production. Dr. Brooks teaches multicultural marketing in her role as an adjunct professor in the School of Professional Studies at the George Washington University. Previously, she's taught journalism and entrepreneurial courses and was entrepreneur in residence in the School of Communications at Howard University. That is also the university where she received her master's degree and PhD. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce you to my friend, my sister, Dr. Sheila Brooks.
The book is called Lucille H. Bluford and the Kansas City Call, Activist Voice for Social Justice. So why the Lucille Bluford book? Well, the book, as we've all mentioned, has emerged from a dissertation, my dissertation research. I was tasked with a topic at Howard University. I decided to do, in my later years, a PhD. And I said, well, you know what? I want to look at an African-American woman in the media. And when I looked at the past decade and the past two decades, I looked and I saw that there were two or three African-American women in this country who had started radio stations, television stations in Washington, D.C., in Philadelphia. But I said, you know, we always look at the mainstream media. We don't tend to go back to our own community, our own roots. And it was very important for me at this stage in my life to do that. And so in looking at whether or not what I should choose and look at an African-American woman in media, I started thinking about women who owned publications, women who wrote for their own community publications and had an influence on what was going on in their communities. And then this particular case with Lucille Bluford, she was trying to eradicate injustices and oppressions that were happening to us in the 1960s, 1970s, and even in the 80s. And we could really talk about a whole lot more today. If she was here today, I don't know how she would handle that. And I wanted to find a media, not just a woman who wrote for the press, but I wanted to find an owner. I wanted to find somebody like me. I decided to leave television news after many years because I wanted to own something. I wanted to be a part of something. I wanted to give back. I wanted to help young people grow in the journalism, PR, marketing, advertising field. And so in looking at a media owner, we always think of Ida B. Wells. Comes right to mind. 1850s, Ida B. Wells owned a newspaper in Memphis, Tennessee, wrote about the lynchings in the South, and then 100 years later, there was Daisy Bates, who wrote in her black newspaper in Arkansas, the Arkansas Gazette. She helped with the Little Rock Nine when they integrated Little Central High School in Arkansas. So here you have 1850s. You have the 1950s, and 100 years in between, we never hear about any other African-American media women who owned their papers, who wrote about the oppressions and injustices in their communities. And so I started doing this research, and I found like four or five of the women. And I ran to Dr. Wilson, and I was so excited. I was taking this course, and I said, oh, I found all these women. I think I got it now. And he said, you can't do all those women. You can't write this book on all five of those women, four or five of those women. You have to select one. You have to really dig into the research. And we're going to spend a little bit of time. I'm going to talk to you about what I found, because I think that's what's so important. We found so much work, just not her work, but the impact that she had on social injustices over a 15-year period. That's the time I picked, 1968. To 1983. And then, so there were other women, and one of them, of course, was Lucille Bluford. And Dr. Wilson kind of directed me and said, I think you might want to look at your own hometown. And I said, oh, no, okay, I got it. So I went there, and I decided that, you know, it was very, very important for me to do that. And why did I do that? Here's what part of the research showed. Black women are overlooked. They were overlooked then, just as we are now. There were very little about black women in, on scholarly research, on feminism, because when we talked about feminism in the 1600s, 1700s, we were talking about white women. We weren't talking about black women. The black women were also overlooked in the black press, because who owned the black press? Black men, and not so much women. And then there was the problem that there was so much grassroots activism going on in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And just as you heard earlier, we black women were stereotyped as double jeopardy, because why? We were women and we were black. Part of my theoretical framework, and it's really important to understand this, is that I had to look at not only what we were doing, but I had to look at feminist theory, because that really set the stage for the women's rights movement. That was very, very important. And then I looked at how black women were positioned in power, and we weren't so much positioned. But when we looked at women like Lucille Bluford, she had this unique angle of vision. She talked about stories in her community. She would get into those stories by going into the community and talking with other women as well as other black women. And then she would tell those stories, which is really important, from her viewpoint. It's also good to know that during this research, there was an association not only with gender, because we were women, but with race, because we were black women. And then there was not only feminism, when we talk about women's movement, but there was black feminism, which came about in the 80s and the 90s. And these were the stories that women like Lucille Bluford told. And that was what was also important to this research. In Lucille Bluford's area, we look at all her stories, and it was her viewpoint, her standpoint on society's injustices and oppressions. So the book, as well as the research, talks about ways that her voice in these stories and commentaries helped influence the community in Kansas City, Missouri. The black community, the white community, and our agenda. And we looked at ways that she really contributed to not only the civil rights movement in this town, but to the women's rights movement. Because as we're gonna see later, every story that she would write, it wasn't just about black people, it was about women and blacks. And she really reflected her own personal experience as a civil rights activist and as a black feminist, and that was very important to her time. One of the things that Dr. Wilson always shared with us during this time is that black women were undervalued, and they deserved to be recognized. And that's what Lucille Bluford was not only trying to do for her community, but for others. She had a real keen awareness of all of the social issues. And why did she have that awareness? Because she actually did what mainstream media cannot do. As an African-American woman who worked for a black newspaper, that's a newspaper of advocacy. You have the black press has always had its own deliberate slant. And that's important, because we could really tell stories here. So what Lucille Bluford did is she actively participated in protest. So when the riots were going on, she was out there. She sat at the lunch counters. She listened and talked to the people who were there with her. And she was also a longtime active member of the NAACP, as well as she had very strong opinionated views on women. And all of those stories were very good for her, for the call, because it was very important for her to tell these stories. So let me tell you a little bit about the research, which was really interesting. Everything was on microfilm. I thought I could run down to the Kansas City Call, and I could ask for all these papers from 10 years ago, and 20 years ago, and 30 years ago. Well, that didn't happen. Everything was on microfilm. I found myself in the library at Howard University at the wee hours of the morning, 3, 4, and 5 o'clock in the morning. I would come here at least 3 or 4 times a year to UMKC as well as to the Kansas City Library and do all this research. And I read story after story after story on Lucille Bluford. And what I found was 358 news stories and commentaries over 15 years. And I looked at those stories from 1968 to 1983, and I looked at two key issues: women's rights, the women's rights movement, civil rights movement. And then I used this analysis. Here's what I did. I coded all of these stories as it related to 5 themes that she constantly wrote about, which were reproductive rights, women, right? Employment rights, rape and domestic violence. Education was a very, very big topic for her. And then there was politics. So I looked at every one of those 358 stories. I coded them by themes, whether they influenced civil rights movement as well as the women's rights movement. And here's what we also found. Lucille Bluford wrote under 3 different names, a couple of other pseudonyms, okay? Her pseudonyms were Louis Blue and L.H. Bluford. And why did she write under those names? Because in those days, in the 60s and the 70s, she would have to mask her identity. And she did that by writing under male pseudonyms. Lucille Bluford, Louis Blue, and L.H. Bluford. So look at this. Here are the story themes. You could see politics. Of these 358 stories, she wrote about politics and education more than anything. And then, of course, there's employment rights. And then her bylines. There were even other names for her bylines: L.H. Bluford, Louis Blue, Lucille Bluford, Lucille H. Bluford. But she wrote, look at this. Can you believe this? She wrote under that male pseudonym more than anything else, because she was writing on controversial issues, issues that were very, very, certainly very important to the Kansas City community, but she regularly used her journalistic voice as a writer, as an editor, as a publisher, so she could break down the barriers of injustices and inequalities in the school system, in the police department, in the community. Her stories were primarily news stories. There were some stories that were commentary. But what was very interesting about the research is the civil rights movement and the civil rights movement and the focus, everything really correlated. If she wrote about blacks in the community, she also was writing about women, whether it related to education or protest or health. And then you see solidarity is a big one, because she was trying to encourage integration in schools throughout her time and her life. And then as far as the link between the two movements, civil rights movement and women's rights movement, she made sure that she included both movements in everything she did. So her activism was very important from the very, very beginning of her life and her career. Her father encouraged her to certainly become a journalist. She also had a high school teacher who encouraged her to become a journalist. She attended school here at the local Lincoln High School. But her activism also became a catalyst for her 70-year career in journalism. There's not a whole lot of folks in our business, whether it's mainstream media or whether it's the black press, that can stay at one publication, one media outlet, one job anymore, right? For 70 years, but she did. She graduated from the University of Kansas, KU, in 1932. And when she graduated, she went to Atlanta for a very short while. She said it got too hot down there. She went for the summer, and she decided that it was way too hot for her after that summer job. And she came back, and then she went to work for the, how many of you remember the Kansas City American? There was also another black newspaper in town, the Kansas City American, as well as the Kansas City Call, but it was a smaller paper. And by the time she got back in town, Chester A. Franklin, who owned the Kansas City Call, as most of you know, encouraged her to come to the Call so that she could begin her career. And then it was Chester Franklin who said to her, you know what, Lucille, I think you need to get a little bit more education and background in journalism. And why not? We're in the state of Missouri. The University of Missouri has one of the best journalism schools in the country. So why not apply there? And she did. And when she applied there, she got accepted. It was a wonderful thing. And then, on the day that she was to start classes, she goes to the school to register for class, and the registrar kindly pulled her out of line and said, can't attend school here because you're black. And it was that activism that you saw in all of those stories that I analyzed and all those stories that she had begun to write then and then continued to write over the years that really catapulted her into filing a lawsuit. So she went to the NAACP. She said, I'm not taking this. I should be able to attend school here. And for the next 3 years, she filed 11 lawsuits. And then the state Supreme Court in Missouri said, you know what? We have to rule in her favor. She can attend school at the University of Missouri. But the University of Missouri decided, nope, we can't take you. You're a black woman. So they shut the Graduate School of Journalism down. Shut the school down. And cited that they shut it down because there were too many students that were being called to war. They told Lucille, well, we really think that you need to take a look at another university. So 30 miles down the road, you know, there was Lincoln University. And what you may not know is that once she got there, she realized there was no journalism school there. But it was because of her activism again that a journalism school was created at Lincoln University in 1942, and it was the first journalism school created in this country at a historically black college and university. She was a phenomenal woman. The book discusses her activist career against racism and sexism in this country. I'm gonna talk to you about a couple of her stories. One of the stories that I lived, and this is why this story was so important to me, because doing all this research was just so phenomenal for me, because in the 60s, I was a young girl living in Kansas City here. And while I was experiencing so much of what was going on in the civil rights movement, and particularly in this instance where she wrote about the Kansas City riots, she accused the police department of inciting riots and arson. Now, how many people will do that? Reporters that will actually go out to the streets, talk to people in the community, and talk to the police department, and then accuse them of inciting the riot. Lucille Bluford did that. That's just the kind of woman she was. She was fearless in everything that she did. During that time, there was 4 days of unrest. 7 people died, more than 200 people were injured, and you know, there were even 1,700 National Guard brought in the city. And it was all because there was a student protest at City Hall, and the administrators wouldn't close the schools in Kansas City following Martin Luther King's funeral on that day. And so all these protests broke out. And when they broke out, it was all because of the rioting, okay? And it was very interesting because when I got to that part of the research and learned about that, I remembered that day. I was attending Holy Name Catholic Church and school at 23rd and Benton. was in the fifth grade, and I'll never forget the nuns grabbing us, placing us on the floor, sharing with us what was going on in the city. The school was being bricked. It was a lot of mayhem on that day. We had to stay and close down classes, and so much was going on. But to know all those years later, and actually conducting the research, that there was one African-American woman who had, you know, she had the audacity to write stories making accusations against the police department on what was going on in the rioting. Another one of her stories, and so many more on the school system. She, in a 1976 issue of the Kansas City Call, she writes a story encouraging the parents to protest the school board. How many reporters do that? Well, you know, we can't do that in mainstream media. We have to just tell the truth, tell the stories, present them as they are, but not Lucille. She said, no, these parents need to understand that if their students have inadequate resources in the city's public schools where the majority of the kids are black, these parents, they know this, but they need to protest. And if they're not going to do it, I'm gonna encourage them to do it. A fearless woman. So she continued to use her journalistic voice to champion equal access, not only to jobs, to school system, affordable health care, and always a better education for women. There's a couple of passages that I do want to share with you, and we want to make sure that we have enough time for Q&A. But there's a couple other folks that I do want you to just hear more about. But before we do that, I do want to let you know, this is what happened to Lucille Bluford 50 years after she was denied admission to the University of Missouri. They gave her two honors. 50 years later, they gave her the honor of the highest honor in journalism, the Missouri Journalism, what is it called, Dr. Wilson? Honor Medal, the Missouri Honor Medal. And then 5 years after that, they decided to give her an honorary doctorate degree. Last year, there were two other honors that she received thanks to so many Missouri legislators. Her birthday was last week, July 1st. She would have been 107 years old. And the Missouri legislature approved legislation to honor her on a Lucille Bluford Day. And then about a couple of weeks ago, it was finally approved that one of the dorms at the University of Missouri is now named in her honor, Lucille Bluford. So before we go on, let me, I just want to read a couple of pieces out of the book. We are going to be selling the book outside and right after this event. So please buy the book and read the book. I have to tell people, read the book. Right. So I want to read a couple of things from the book that I think are very, very important to this audience. Although she never married or had children, she lived a life of fulfillment. Bluford's editorial colleague and successor as publisher of The Call recalled Lucille saying her work and the newspaper staff took the place of children in her life, and she harbored no regrets. In July 1972, more than two decades before her death, the staff at the Kansas City Call took the opportunity to recognize their publisher with a heartfelt tribute, while the modest, and she was a modest woman, Miss Bluford, was out of town attending, what? An NAACP conference in Washington, D.C. In this special article that appeared on the editorial page, the Call's awe-inspired staff expressed appreciation for Bluford's stellar career as a pioneering champion of the causes of racial and gender equality. And the tribute recounted the many contributions Lucille Bluford had made, including integrating the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and along the way, leading to creation of the nation's first journalism department at a historically black college or university, which is now known as Lincoln University in Jefferson City, Missouri. I want to thank all of you for taking the time today, but I want to tell you one more story about Lucille Bluford that just came to mind. I remember another story that was part of that research, and it was when Jesse Jackson came to town, and he was running for president the first time. He was in a big auditorium with a lot of reporters and a lot of Kansas City residents. And I mean, there were several thousand people here in this room. And Lucille Bluford was there, but she was up in the rafters. You know, it was all theater seating in a big auditorium. And he gave his speech, said a few words, asked if there were any questions. And Lucille Bluford just got up, stood up, and spoke down to him and let him know. They said, Reverend, the next time you come to town, you make sure you call the black press first. You make sure you call the Kansas City Call. That's just the kind of woman she was. She let everybody know how she really felt about anything. But I do want to take this opportunity to bring Mr. John Bluford here. He was kind enough to bring to me tonight, I know all of you can't see this, but he could tell us a little bit about this, a Bluford family tree. Is that amazing? Oh my goodness. And there's Guyon Bluford and Lucille and the family. What you will learn from the book is that so many of you, you know about her and her stories, and when you read the book, you'll hear so much more about those 358 stories. And remember, that was just over a 15-year period during a very tumultuous time here in Kansas City, Missouri. There were so many other stories she told in that 70-year career, which were so very, very important. She was not from here. She was born and raised in the South, in the Carolinas, and they moved here later on in life. She was raised initially by her grandmother because her mom passed away when she was 4 years old. Her father had moved here to become a teacher here at Lincoln High School. And when her grandmother passed when she was 10 years old, she came here later. And then it was there at Lincoln High School where she started writing for it, like most of us did. When we were interested in journalism, you write for the school newspaper, you write for the school yearbook. That's how you get your initial training. And there was this one teacher, Trussie Smothers, that she talks about, she always talked about as she was growing up, that really influenced her in getting to become a journalist so that she could tell the stories. But she wanted to make sure that people heard, as I shared with you about the research and the theory behind it, her feminism, her black feminism during a very, very tough time in the 60s and the 70s and 80s. And with that, Mr. John Bluford, can you also join me here at the podium?
So I have a convergence of many thoughts as I sit here and listen to Dr. Brooks. A couple of things. One, just a note. I mean, you mentioned how opinionated Lucille Bluford was on education and women's rights. Well, she was opinionated on everything. She had a lot of thoughts. She had a lot of thoughts. And there are two things that are relevant to me and perhaps this audience in this building with Crosby Kemper and his staff. Well, first and foremost, I came to Kansas City in large part because of this woman named Lucille Bluford, who my family had shared with me. She was iconic in the family and said, you know, you have an aunt in Kansas City. And in the early 80s, I came here to interview her for this family tree, as she was one of the older members of the family. And I learned a lot about everything, including her brother, John H. Bluford, who lived with her on Montague. And so I came here and I met with her for the first time to learn that she wasn't my aunt. She's really my cousin. But because of the age discrepancy, I've been calling her aunt forever, so she's my aunt. And then secondly, my first interview for Truman Medical Centers, or one of my first interviews, happened to be here in this building. It was Nations Bank building, and one of the members on our board was a gentleman by the name of Bill Nelson, William Nelson, president of the bank. And he asked that the interview happen here, and it happened right downstairs. And I always have a warm feeling when I come here. So two stories. I didn't realize how well-known and iconic Miss Bluford was, other than within the family. She was a big deal, ran a newspaper. So I come here, and not long after being in Kansas City, I have to make a run to Washington, D.C., and do some lobbying with a couple of senators and folks from Missouri about healthcare-related things. And I go to Senator Ashcroft's office, former attorney general, former governor of the state of Missouri, and introduce myself. Hi, Senator John Blue. Oh, I know your mother, Lucy. She's a great woman. I said, yes, she is. Yes, she is. Yes, she is. And I lived off that for a number of years. Well, Mom is a wonderful woman. And then perhaps on a more serious note, in her later days, bedridden, I had an opportunity to go visit with her about 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening in her home, bedridden, with Representative Alan Wheat, another great guy, and got to meet him in this process. And Mamie, I bet you we spent 4 hours at her bedside listening. And we got a history of everything Kansas City. So all those warm thoughts come to my mind. Dr. Brooks, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to say a few words. Thank you.
Questions. Yes, sir. Oh, absolutely. That is an amazing story. When Lucille Bluford, when she was asked to come back to the University of Missouri 50 years after she was denied admission, she was asked to come back to receive the Missouri Medal of Honor for journalism. And in that room were 7 people, one of whom was the registrar who actually pulled her out of line that day. Okay, and told her she could not come. So she saw him face to face again 50 years later. They had a conversation. I understand I interviewed a professor, one of the professors who was also in that room, Professor Brian Brooks, and he shared that story with Dr. Wilson and I. And it was amazing, but she had a conversation with him. She shared with him what she'd done over the years and how disappointed that she was not there to receive her degree at the university. But what she did say is that in receiving that honorary doctorate, as well as that Missouri medal, that she would leave a legacy to so many other young, aspiring African-American journalists, particularly women, so that they could have the open door to get degrees, higher degrees in journalism at the University of Missouri. Thank you, sir, for reminding me of that, too. Any other questions that anybody may have? Her question was about why did I go get a PhD? Well, it was interesting because you heard about my television news career, which was very successful, being a reporter, anchor, in management, but I learned something in management after I had gotten to Washington, D.C., and that was in the late 80s, and I just woke up one day and felt like I was smarter than everybody in the newsroom. You heard about that cockiness, right? And I said, so And I, thank you, Patty. And so I started a firm. But that firm was a production company built off of my news background. And what we all have to learn when we build businesses, when we look at other companies and organizations that we're affiliated with, at some point you have to pivot. At some point you have to change what you do. At some point you have to re-engineer the business and reinvent yourself. So the PhD for me was not only me becoming a lifelong learner, but me reinventing myself, because as we all know, in the late 80s, when there was a in 2008, when there was a recession, I've been running that production company for 18 years. And all my clients were either the federal government and the military, or they were those employers, CBS, ABC, NBC, all those people that I was smarter than, right? But everybody got phones taking pictures tonight, right? iPads, social media. The world had changed in the media. And no longer could I have all this equipment and do the kind of work in our company that we were doing. And I had to turn it around. I had to look in a different direction. And overnight, I lost several millions of dollars. And when you have to drop to your knees and you have to figure out what you have to do, then that's when you know you have the test of being a real entrepreneur. I'm Karen, you know that. So we had to just turn it around. And that's when I needed to look at advertising and marketing and public relations. And I knew I couldn't do it on my own. So what do? You go to school. You sit in a classroom with young people. You learn about what social media is. You learn about the new media that's going on in the newsrooms across this country. And then you apply it to your business. So that was the real reason to go back to school. And it helped me. And who knew a book would come out of all of this? Who knew any of this? So it was a good thing. Yes, sir. I did see some of those letters. I saw more of Ms. Bluford's. And then, you know, what was real interesting, and I think my dissertation committee called me on this one, Ms. Bluford also had done an oral history that is in the National Archives in Washington, D.C. In 1989, and who I never, and we didn't, so we, I uncovered a lot of that. Yes, sir. Thank you for sharing, for asking about that, sir. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. You know, I didn't come across her, but I'll tell you who I did come across. I did come across Lloyd Gaines. How many of you remember who Lloyd Gaines was? So I didn't come across her, but it was real interesting. And that's another interesting story in the book, so I'm so glad you brought that up. In the Lloyd, while I didn't know about her, you have to share that with me a little bit about that, because I'd love to know more about that. Okay, absolutely, okay. The Lloyd Gaines story that she was a part of, Lloyd Gaines was an African-American male who had applied for law school in Missouri before Lucille Bluford applied for journalism school. And he went missing, and he's still missing to this day, okay? What was interesting that's in the book that I learned in that oral history that's in the National Archives is Ms. Bluford was the one who put him on the bus to Chicago. So that, and then he was part of the Alpha fraternity, and he was staying at some home of one of the folks, right, a boarding home, and the boarder had asked him to go out to the store for something, and he was never seen again. Never seen again. Never came back. Never seen again. But what was really interesting about that was Lucille Bluford was one of the last people to see him, and that was one of the things that really also was a catalyst for her activism and suing the university, because the NAACP had become very active in that case as well. Any other questions? Well, thank you all for coming.